Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at tailormade101.com. That's TAILORMADE101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. Today we talk about the president. He delivered an epic State of the Union speech. We break it down, and we take a look at the parts that are important to you. Now, speaking of the president, did you see the brouhaha between President Obama and Janet Brewer? We talk about this, and I definitely have an opinion of what happened. What's yours? Did you hear about another Atlanta school snubbing African-American history by playing a slavery game in elementary school? Now, didn't it just happen in Georgia a few weeks ago? Why are people disrespecting, or should I say being insensitive to African-Americans? We will take your calls on this too. Facebook has an IPO. Will you get in on this one? We'll be talking about this and a lot more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. Now, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, of course, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Before we get started, I want to say congratulations to jazz musician Miles Davis. That's right, the man who played the trumpet like no other will be honored with a U.S. postal stamp. I also would like to say hello to everyone listening in from Hair for You Salon with owner Missy Lane. A big shout out to you. Jim and I appreciate all the things that you do, and I can't wait to get you on the show in a couple of weeks. Also, I had the privilege of being a special guest of Mr. Curtis King. Now, Mr. Curtis King, of course, is the founder and president of the Black Academy of Arts and Letters here in Dallas, also affectionately known as T-Ball. Now, Mr. King, I thank you. I really enjoyed myself. I was his special guest at a jazz and poetry night as well. And I really had a great time out there. So I would encourage you to go out there and check out his website. And that's at www.tball.org. That's T, B as in Bravo, AAL.org. And tell him you heard it right here on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Also, five new members were inducted into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame this week. most notably Jonathan Rogers, former TV One president, and Gwen Ifill. That's right, the moderator of the Washington Weeks. Congratulations to you all. So first up, we want to talk about the brouhaha between President Obama and Arizona Governor Jan Brewer. This was the craziest thing I've seen in a long time. Now, there's a lot of chatter in the blogosphere, Facebook and Twitter, about this blatant disrespect. Now, just to recap, here's what happened. The president arrives at the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport in Arizona. He gets off the plane and is greeted by the governor, Jan Brewer. Now, Jan Brewer walks up to him, greeting him, and she devolved into this tense exchange after what they say. President Obama raised concerns about the way the governor's political memoir portrayed him. Now, this is according to their spokesman. Now, let's be clear. We would never know the details of the conversation. Never know the details. But I can say what we do know is that her behavior was inappropriate and disrespectful. In fact, the Boston Herald reports, according to a pool reporter, the two spoke intensely for a few minutes and talked over each other at times. At one point, Brewer pointed her finger at the president. Now, he appeared to walk away from the conversation, with Brewer still talking, and the governor said later that she didn't finish her sentence. Now, very seldom do people get this animated over things that are written in books, especially President Obama. He's been always cool, calm, and collected. Now, I never saw the president engage with people over the birth certificate, and you know that was crazy. Even when the guy yelled out, "You lie," Joe Wilson, in the joint session, he didn't get all that upset. Noticeably, anyway. The billboard in Colorado, which portrayed the president as a terrorist, a homosexual, a Mexican, and a Muslim. I mean, he didn't, you know, get all that upset about that. So why is it then he would get so upset about this letter or about her book? You know, I really believe there's more to the conversation that they're leading us to believe. Moreover, to say this was about a letter, I'm going to say this in my ESPN voice. Come on, man. Most people in that line of work use email anyway. All of a sudden, she wants to hand him a handwritten letter about something. So, again, I think there's a whole lot going on behind the scenes that we just they're not talking about right now. Also, I don't know if you heard this or not, but somehow Georgia has got the notion they want to put the president basically on trial. That's right. It's a hearing to determine whether President Obama is eligible to be on the primary ballot in Georgia. This is true. This is not something that was fictitious or made up. There's an actual trial that took place on Thursday with the defendants, Obama and his legal team, not even being present. Now, Georgia Deputy Chief Judge Michael Malihi subpoenaed the president last week after refusing to hear his legal team's challenge to the case. But neither Obama nor his lawyers ever planned on showing up. Instead, the president, attorney Michael Jablinski, wrote a letter to Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, a Republican, and the ultimate arbiter of the question of Obama's ballot eligibility, telling him that he expected Kemp to throw out this baseless, costly and unproductive case. But yet they still had the case. So the bottom line here is they're holding the case to say the president should not be on the ballot because he is not an American citizen. He doesn't have what it takes to be on the ballot. Now, I mentioned this before in the past. You got to really pay a close attention to what's happening here. They, first of all, talked about the super PACs. Now you have an unlimited amount of money going into campaigns. Next, if you look at the fact that they're redistricting these different states so they can say, hey, more votes are going in this area than other areas, and there's a case right now in Texas that's being watched closely because they're changing the lines, if you will. And then if you also look at the notion of this trying to suppress the ballots by having voter IDs now being almost mandatory in a lot of different states. So if they were really concerned about the president being unfit as a president, if they was really concerned about him not being taking the country in the right direction, why would they try to use all of these different tactics to try to win the election? So in a lot of cases, a lot of people just kind of push these things aside, but we need to pay close attention to these issues because they could affect the outcome. And you can begin to see these things move into our legislature, move into being voted on, move into being judged upon. In a lot of cases, if we don't pay attention or fall asleep on these issues, we can have a very different country than we know it. 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. That's the number to call. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to take your calls. Be sure to go to and check out our blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. But stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jamal. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and Chief Operating Officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, well, well. The brouhaha between President Obama and Jan Brewer First up, how do we get here? I mean, Republican House member Joe Wilson of South Carolina shouted, "You lie," during President Obama's health care speech. A massive sign erected along I-70 Business Loop in Grand Junction, Colorado, depicts four caricatures of Obama, one as a suicide bomber, another as a gangster, the third as a Mexican revolutionary, and the fourth a homosexual. The New Yorker portrays an image of the fist bump, if you remember, and the American flag burning in the fireplace. Of course, who can forget the president's birth certificate? And now, an elected official points her finger into the president of the United States' face in what appears to be anger. What do you make of this nonsense?
Well, unfortunately, and pardon me, I have some allergies that are acting up, so my voice might sound a little different, but it's unfortunate that we have allowed all of this disrespect to go on, and without calling it what it was in the very beginning, because nobody wanted to quote-unquote use the race card. But you cannot tell me that it's anything other than the fact that you're dealing with the black man who's elected to the highest office of the land, and that all of these things that you mentioned, and there's so many more that's come out over the years and over the months in this last, where we are now with some of the comments from the people at some of these town hall meetings, it's utterly ridiculous. I mean, it basically, this election of President Obama has, in my opinion, pulled the veil off of how people have thought about and felt about people of color all along, but just couldn't say nothing. Because they had, you know, quote-unquote, kept us in our place. And now, with the election of President Obama being commander-in-chief, some have spent so much time, money, and energy trying to delegitimize him to make him be something other than. And it's simply unacceptable. I mean, you can call it, oh, they used to do this to Bush, but no, they didn't. No. President Bush did lie to us as it relates to the weapons of mass destruction, because there wasn't any. But no one ever stood up on the floor of the State of the Union and called him a liar. So although someone may have called him a liar, they didn't call him a liar during the State of the Union. See, that's a difference.
Right.
And they have just totally disrespected the office of the presidency, in my opinion.
So what do you make of the smokescreen about the letter and the comments about the book? I mean, worse things have been said about the president, as I mentioned earlier. Now, so is she trying to sell some books, or is the letter a smokescreen? What do you think about that?
Well, I think you can never tell with people like her, because they always have some kind of ulterior motive. But I think she allowed herself to get caught up in the moment. I don't think she thought it was going to go like it did, but, her book sales did increase, excuse me, from that particular incident. I think they said 150% with sales on Amazon, so it met some need for her. But at the end of the day, you know, as animated as they try to say she is and how she talks with her hands, there's no way you point your finger in the face of the president. I don't care. I mean, there's Every argument they try to come up with, you cannot come up with one that's going to justify having that being that close up in the president's face with your finger. It's unacceptable. I couldn't do it to my boss.
I have to agree with you. That's right. I mean,
imagine
me going up there.
Can you go to your boss?
Exactly, right.
And have a conversation about something he's saying to you, you know, well, I'd appreciate, you know, how you wrote your notes or whatever he say to you, and you get mad because he said it to you, and you point your finger in his face. Can you do that?
No, it ain't going to happen.
And still have a job.
Right. So,
or not be placed on some administrative leave.
Right.
No, you can't. You couldn't.
Right, absolutely. So here's what's disturbing to me, and I think Donovan Slack wrote a great article in Politico yesterday, and he writes this. Reaction to the Jan Brewer encounter is still bubbling. with some black commentators now suggesting the image of Arizona governor wagging her finger at the president of the United States has touched a nerve in the African-American community. On MSNBC Thursday, Al Sharpton posited that Brewer's treatment of President Obama was another example of disrespect in a list of many for the nation's first black president. His guest, Joe Madison, said such incidents show that there are people who cannot stand the fact that there is an African-American who is now one of the most powerful individuals on the planet. Now, an NAACP official went a few steps further in an interview with Politico Friday, saying the TIFF played an age-old and discriminatory stereotypes of whites being superior to blacks. Helio Shelton, senior vice president for advocacy and policy at the NAACP, said he was particularly disturbed by Brewer telling reporters afterward that she felt a bit threatened, if you will, in the attitude that he had. And then he responded, "What are you afraid of? He would steal your purse?" So I kind of chuckled at that because the fact that she said she felt a bit threatened, if you will, in his attitude. What do you make of her comments in that direction?
Right. I mean, so that justified you putting your finger in his face. This is a man who doesn't very seldom raises his voice in public, who finally, for many of us, millions of us, you know, put a line in the sand Tuesday night during his State of the Union and, you know, stood real straight and had some real power behind those words. And now all of a sudden, after that particular speech, now you want to say you felt threatened. Really? In front of all them people, you felt threatened.
Well,
in front of all the cameras.
Not to mention for her to posture in the way that she did and to say that this taller, articulate, strong, positive black man made her feel threatened, to me suggests a whole lot of things.
Oh, for sure. It flies right into the face of what we've known all along, and that is the fear they have of people such as the president standing his guard, standing strong, making his case, and not backing down. They, you know, for where they thought they had knocked him out at in terms of being obstinate and not working with him over these past 3 years, they really just made him that much of a better fighter. So
yeah, absolutely.
All
I
the
agree
daggers,
with that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, all the daggers they've thrown at him and all the lies and innuendos that they've said to him and about him over the last 3 years is now going to come back on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they have to do something now. And so for her to stand there on that tarmac, as I stated, with all of the people around and cameras flashing, for her to even say she felt threatened was disingenuous.
I agree. 323-580-5712. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. So we looked at the whole notion of this disrespect. We took the angle of her saying she feeling threatened by this African-American male. I want to take another look at something that Melissa Harris Perry said, and I want to get you to respond. So I'm going to play her interpretation of what happened. Take a listen.
Reading of it is, here are two public officials arguing about a book, which could be actually a really, you know, exciting
sort of
outcome.
Yeah.
So that's my charitable read. But the fact is, when I see that still, I cannot help but to be reminded of the still photograph that was captured in 1957 in Little Rock, Arkansas, of the young woman Hazel screaming at a young Elizabeth Eckford on her way trying to get into Little Rock High School, a central high school in Little Rock, Arkansas. And the reason I bring up that image is because what we've come to know about Hazel in the years later is that as a young woman, Hazel, the young woman who was screaming at Elizabeth Eckford, was not herself sort of particularly, you know, full of racial animus or anything like that, but she was caught up in this moment of racial anxiety, of making this point against these people who were coming in and trying to force their way into the school, and she sort of enjoyed the show of being able to yell at Elizabeth Eckford in this moment. But that image captured all of the ugliness, all of the nastiness of the larger political milieu, and I feel like this picture does as well.
So what do you make of that comment, that the fact that, you know, we're, again, I said earlier, we will never know these particulars of the conversation. We would never know what was in that letter, and we would never know what she whispered or what the president whispered to her in that particular instance of that moment. But that picture, people say a picture speaks a thousand words. That picture will stay with us for a long time. And the fact that so many things have been bubbling up that I listed earlier about the you lie, about the images that the New Yorker portrayed, the images that were portrayed in Colorado, and now this particular image will stay with us for a long time, and all of the nastiness around his birth certificate and all of the languages that people have been talking towards him. To me, Melissa Harris Perry put it best when she talked about that image back then, now kind of mirrors the image that Jan Brewer had with the president. With her pointing her finger in the president's face will stay with us for a long period of time, but it really kind of captures the state of our society today. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I mean, because not knowing what she said is irrelevant to me, because I really don't care what the conversation was about. You just do not put your finger, not only in the president's face, but you don't put your finger in my face. So the fact of the matter is that, as one lady said, is just poor home training. Who told you that you had a right to put your finger in somebody's face? And then to put your finger in the face of the president of the United States. You just don't do that. You just don't put your finger in anybody's face, and you definitely don't do it to the president, because across the board it's a sign of disrespect.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, you know, just across the board, and that image, and Melissa Harris Perry is correct. I immediately went somewhere else when I saw that. I mean, I immediately went back to another time. Mm-hmm. And they keep talking about wanting to take us back. That's the time that they're talking about taking us back to. And we better wake up and pay attention, because we're going to look up and we're not only are we not going to be able to vote, but we're not going to be able to go work. We're not going to be able to not only get on the back of the bus, we're not going to be able to get on the bus. And so we have got to, I mean, that instant, that moment, that still, and I respect the president and Valerie Jarrett and all his people trying to downplay it. That's fine. You all can say you got other things to be concerned about, and you do. But perception is reality in some people's world. And the perception there is that, and the perception has been for his entire time being in office, that you can treat this president any kind of way you want to,
right,
because he is a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a black,
yeah,
man. Because that's,
yeah,
what we do to people of color. We can treat them, and not people of color. I'm going to correct myself. Black people. Because they,
right,
treat,
right,
black people a whole lot different than they treat anybody else. And we can call that what we want to call it, but that's the reality of the situation. And until we call that elephant in the middle of the room an elephant and quit trying to call it a donkey, we got to call it what it is. And that elephant is, that level of disrespect, that level of being disingenuous, that level of nastiness has been around since he decided to run. And because we thought we were such a nation that cared and could sing kumbaya and hold hands, and we were so post-racial, this election by itself has pulled those blinders off. It's,
yeah,
people in,
yeah,
your circle right now that I guarantee you didn't think they thought like they do. But since this man been in office, just read some of your stuff on Facebook. them people on Facebook that you've been friends with all your life and you just thought, you know, y'all was the best of friends and they didn't see color, look at some of their comments. And you can't tell me it's all about his policy, because it's not. Because when you're attacking his character, that has nothing to do with his policy.
Right. We're going to go to the phone lines. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Caller, last four, 2456. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri. I'm Minister Alice M. Cootie. Hi, Sister Jima. Hi, Brother Patrick.
Hey, welcome to the show.
God bless you. God bless you.
I'm loving it.
I'm loving the format. I'm loving the information. And I'm loving being informed.
Awesome.
But this is my opinion, and this is what I have to say. Had it been any other president, she would have been arrested, threw down to the floor, handcuffed, the whole nine beats, and she would have been up on charges. And as far as the other excerpt that you played of the young lady speaking about when the Caucasian girl was hollering at the young African-American girl at that time.
Right, right.
I can't take it. I barely can breathe half the time. I just get it just continues to escape me. What is it that we don't see about hatred? Why do we as African Americans continue to try? Why do we continue to listen to them? They always try to explain away hatred. And a lot of times, I want to ask Caucasians, what do you know about hatred? And then it gets me, because out of all the races, when you talk about the other minorities or people of color, we are the only ones, blacks, Africans or African Americans are the only ones that they justify their hatred for and actually believe that you're supposed to believe and actually feel and think that it's okay. He is President Barack Obama until the day God calls him home. He's President Barack Obama.
Right.
Anybody else would have been handcuffed.
That's right.
You would have been taken to jail. They would have knocked you off of the platform. That's what they would have done to anybody else. And I'm not concerned about what was said, because, no, we'll never know what was said. But you cannot explain away hatred. And I am so ashamed of our country. This is 2012. I am so ashamed of the United States of America. And I would like for you all to do a format. I would love to hear what other people in other countries, what they really think of our country right about now.
And you know, that's an excellent
really
point.
Think about that.
Absolutely. I think we need to do that, yeah.
And I want you to do a format on the 40 acres in a mule. I want my reparations check.
I heard that.
They have compensated everybody but the African Americans. You've got to give us that reparations check.
So let me ask you a question. Do you think we have some culpability in the way that they're treating us? Before you answer, let me take you somewhere real quick. So
okay.
when you listen to rap music, when you see the crime rate at the rate that it is with African Americans killing each other more, when you look at the education system where we're dropping out more, when you look at any statistic that's negative that we're leading in, and when you look at any statistic that is positive we're behind in, and because we treat each other so bad, do you think that has a lot to do with how they treat us? You know,
No. They're part of the problem. Institutionalized racism is a part of the problem. Why doesn't this country accept the fact that we live and operate in institutionalized racism,
right.
Institutionalized racism. I mean, my brother, yeah, well, you can go get an education. You can get it. You can go get it. But they still hate you. They still believe you don't belong where you belong. You still got to work 50 times harder.
That's right. That's right.
To get where you're going.
You
now, I've worked with young Caucasians where it's taken me all my life to buy a house and get a house. But because of the color of your skin, you can go in the bank. Your mama can go in the bank. Your daddy can go in the bank and just sign and see the paper, and you can get a loan or whatever else you need because of the color of your skin. And I'm 55 years old.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. You're
absolutely right. Yep.
I deserve everything I work for.
That's right.
And if you're taking jobs out of the urban areas and you're not putting anything in there even for a college graduate to get, of course, somebody that doesn't have an education, they don't stand a chance.
That's right.
If you constantly going to keep your foot on my neck, I don't have a chance. Okay, if you passing out the grants or whatever, and then my brother, my husband, my brother, my spouse, my neighbor, he comes to get a job and you still got it rigged up, hooked up. Come on, I'm tired of playing the game.
Right. So.
I mean, you got brothers who don't even have police records or anything else. They still can't get a job in the urban area. Come on now.
So, where you see us in the next 20 years? You see us getting any better?
Where do I see us in the next 20 years? I see another, the riots. I see the riots. They think these kids are acting crazy now. I see us going back to the riots. You can only keep people down for so long.
Okay.
I see us going back to the riots. Because, see, now you messing with educated folk.
That's right.
You got me where I can barely eat.
You
got me where my girls have to buy groceries for me.
And I work
every day. And I don't have no shame. Because if I'm hungry, hey, daughter, you got to put some groceries in my icebox. And it's okay. So how do you think an African-American or black man feels? Everybody's not on the corner with a 40-ounce in their hand.
Right.
You're talking about institutionalized racism. I want to talk about economics. Get your foot off of my neck.
Right.
So my brother can feed his kids. So he can go back home. So my family can come back together. So I can sit down. So I don't have to be the mother and the father.
Right.
Okay?
So Jim,
what they need to do.
Oh, outstanding. Thank you for that. Thank you for your comment. Jim, so what do you think about what she said?
I'm going to hang up, Jima.
Okay, thank you.
Bless you.
I agree with the feeling of it's just too much, you know, and how much more, you know, do we have to suffer and endure for, you know, people to be okay with themselves. Mm-hmm. And I agree that if we don't get a handle on some of these things that are happening, things could really look bad. I mean, you're talking about printed newspapers. What we talked about last week with the Jewish newspaper, you know, basically calling for the assassination of the president.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about the elected official from the state of Kansas, House Speaker there, who, you know, wants to misquote scripture and use it in such a fashion to say that his children are fatherless and his wife is a widow,
right,
in reference to the president.
Mm-hmm.
Those things will trigger the ear of somebody, and that somebody might decide they want to go out and do something. They might not do it to the president.
Mm-hmm.
They might try to do it somewhere else. And that somewhere else, that other person might retaliate. And so here we go. And so we want to say, you know, on the one hand, words don't mean anything, but on the other hand, words mean everything.
You know, what I thought was the most significant thing that she said, the minister said, was the fact that no matter what we do, you go out and get all the education, you go out and do all the right things, but you're still subjected and still treated as such. And a great example of that is the president. I mean, he's done everything, you know, right. You know, granted, he has flaws like everybody else, but for the most part, he followed the rule book, right? He went to Harvard University. He went to college. He got married. He didn't cheat on his wife. I mean, he done all, and they still treating him bad. So I think the most significant thing that she said is when I posed the question about, you know, are we bringing these things on ourselves? And she clearly articulated no, because no matter what we do, we still seen as a second-class citizen. That was outstanding, and I really appreciate that comment. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to talk about what's happening down in Georgia. Now, I don't know if you heard this or not, but the fact of the matter is they're down there teaching children. Actually, they're now playing a slavery game with third graders. This is crazy. I'm going to play the soundbite when we return. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, Tailor-Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So what's going on in Georgia? I just can't believe this. For the last several weeks, we've been hearing these things in Georgia. Now, children at a Georgia elementary school told their parents they were forced to play a game called Catch a Slave. Now, this is according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution report. 4 third-grade students who attend Camp Creek Elementary School in Atlanta said that they were forced to play a tag-like game in which some of them were slaves and the other students were slave catchers. Now, parent Erica Lashley said her 8-year-old daughter told her that the teacher came up with the idea based on material they were learning. She would sit on the bench, and the slave catchers will come up to the door and ask, did she have any slaves, the girl said. Now, I can't understand for the life of me why they're doing this kind of stuff. Jimmy, are we too insensitive, or what's going on here?
No, I don't think they are too insensitive. As I've stated over the last couple of months, over the last year, because as I stated, this goes back to Michelle Bachmann's claim that black children were better under slavery than they are now. I don't understand their preoccupation with slavery. I just don't understand it. I mean, then you have the state of Tennessee wanting to erase slavery out of their history books as it relates to our founding fathers, so that they don't appear like they were bad people because they had slaves. So now you want to erase it. At the same time, a couple of states over, we're using slavery as a game outside. When did slavery become a game? When did losing your life and your livelihood and your family become a game of tag? Who comes up with this? That we, Georgia got a whole lot going on. To all my Georgia friends out there, y'all need to get some people out of office, because they are doing your children a great disservice, because you have, a couple weeks ago, they was teaching them math by doing slavery. Now
exactly,
we're playing
tag
with slavery.
Right,
and I just go back to the point, there's no way that they could do math talking about the Holocaust. No
right,
way.
Right. Yeah.
And everybody in that district wouldn't have been fired. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I know. So staying on Georgia, I'm going to play something, and I talked about this earlier, the fact that they're putting the president on trial in Georgia, and they're trying to get him off the ballot. So I want you to take a listen to something else that's going on down in Georgia. Take a listen.
Late this morning, attorneys wrapped up a hearing on a birther allegation that could keep President Barack Obama off the Georgia primary ballot. Channel 2's Carol Sparge was there and is live in downtown Atlanta with the plaintiff's fight against the president. Carol.
Well, for those who filed the lawsuits had requested that President Obama and his attorney be here in the courtroom this morning. They did not show up. The plaintiffs say that President Obama is not really a U.S. citizen. It was a packed courtroom, and those who filed suit alleging President Obama is not a U.S. citizen and should be kept off the primary ballot in Georgia because of that. One witness testified that President Obama's father wasn't a citizen. He was a citizen of Africa. Others testified there were signs that President Obama had a fraudulent Social Security number. The counsel to the president has asked the Georgia Secretary of State to intervene and bring these lawsuits to a halt, arguing that courts have already determined across the country and other courts that there's no validity to these claims. Those representing those filing suit argue otherwise.
This man is a complete fraud. He is using a forged birth certificate. He is using a stolen Social Security number. This is unacceptable. This man is just making a joke out of this country.
Now, the judge asked all of the attorneys to file briefs by February 5th. He is then expected to make a ruling after that. We are live in downtown Atlanta. Carol Sparks, Channel 2, Action News.
Okay, so quite naturally, people have been blowing this thing aside because they're saying, oh, that's just some crazy Tea Partiers or those birther people. But the reason why this is now becoming significant is because they're filing in a state, in a court of law, and trying to get him removed from the primary ballot, which means that and when it comes to obtaining delegates, he won't be able to obtain those delegates. So, again, we really have to pay close attention to these people because they're not just, causing noise. They're really trying to change the system. Now, granted, it could go before the court or the judge, and he could rule against it, and it can continue to go on throughout the season. But because if the judge allowing this case to take place without throwing it out, that means he may just listen to the argument. And so who knows what the outcome may be at that particular time. So, again, I'm not real sure what's going on in Georgia, but is it something in the milk ain't clean? Gene, what do you say?
Of course it's not clean. And the sad part about it is that here you have this judge trying to subpoena the president to come down there, and yet you have the, you know, your GOP candidate in Newt Gingrich, you know, having this thing about activist judges, like, you know, only liberal judges are activists. So what do you call these people? I mean, they have no proof. They're making these wild claims about his Social Security number. How do you know? How does she know his Social Security number is not real? Who is she?
Well, which means it should be an indictment of the system as opposed to the president. I mean,
right.
If you want to talk about, you can't go to him for obtaining one. You got to go to the system which issued him one.
Right, right. And so, but all of that to say, it's so much. Because at no other time in history has a president's credentials, a president's birth, a president's citizenship been questioned.
Right, right.
No other time. And John McCain was born in Puerto Rico. Right?
Exactly.
Mitt Romney's dad was born in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
He ran for president.
Yeah,
so how is it that this man has proof born in Hawaii and we're still talking about it? That's why,
right.
I understand. How is this still happening? Why are we still having this conversation?
Right. We're going to go to the phone lines again. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Caller, give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Your mic is hot.
My name's John. I'm in Florida.
Okay, John.
How you doing?
Great. Give us you got a comment or a question?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this Georgia thing because it's so absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what's happening with the slave thing down there. I mean, they've done. There have been. Exercises done before in the past where they would take blue-eyed children and make them slaves to brown-eyed children to try to show them and make them, you know, empathetic. So I don't know what George is doing, but they what bothers me here more and is what you're talking about with the president. Georgia has dismissed many claims already about from these birther claims. They've been heard in several different counties over the last 3 years. Matter of fact, not only have they dismissed the claims of the judges dismissed, they've also filed made lawyers pay penalties for bringing frivolous lawsuits into the Georgia courtroom based on these birther claims. So, you know, I don't know. Apparently there's a representative from the Republican Party leading this charge and bringing this charge in this particular case.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I don't know what the judge is thinking, you know, because, you know, first of all, you're not going to keep the president off the ballot, because if he says if this judge rules in favor of you know, keeping Obama off the ballot, they will go into a federal court and they'll reverse it.
Right.
But it just goes to show you, you know, the lengths that these people will go to. And I actually think that this could probably help President Obama, because he is polling fairly well in Georgia, and this might be able to put him over the top. And I don't think a Democrat's won Georgia since Jimmy Carter. So,
wow,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, this might, you know, people may take a look at this if this gets enough media attention and say enough. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And while we're talking about where fathers are, first of all, there's a 1934 law in this country that says if your parents are either of your parents are born in the United States, then you are a United States citizen, because,
right.
you know, back then we had territorial positions like Arizona. McCain's father was born in Arizona, and McCain was actually born, you know, on a naval base somewhere. So, you know, that's the reason the law was created. But, you know, if these people want to talk about where Obama's father was born, why don't they talk about where Mitt Romney's father was born, which was
right.
Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and Mitt Romney's father ran for the presidential nomination.
That's right,
you know, Yeah, so I mean, this absolutely becomes absolutely stupid, unless of course you're trying to make the claim that Obama's mother was not American, that that his grandparents were not from Kansas and so forth. I mean, you know, what kind of stupidity is this? And then they come up with this false Social Security card. Tell me something. Why don't you? I'd like to see any of these people go out there and find Mitt Romney's Social Security card or anybody else. This has got to be something that somebody planted out there. Why would you A, be able to get Obama's Social Security card, since we know how much information and mm-hmm. how many bad things you can do based on someone's Social Security card, and B, why would Obama need a false birth certificate if his mother is born in the United States?
Yeah.
What would be the reasoning for that? This is just
I think I lost you there, Jay from Florida. There you go. Okay.
It makes the media from Georgia pick this up, makes the people in Georgia really look at this and say, we don't want this kind of nonsense, and maybe it'll help the president in the general election.
So what do you think? What do you think is at the core or the root of this issue? What does your gut tell you that's at the core that's driving this issue?
Well, I would think that I think twofold. I think obviously you still have bigotry. But I also think I think this more often now, there's a lot of geopolitical bigotry. I mean, we see things where people will use things from the past to be able to gain advantage now. I mean, for instance, a woman who goes. There for the most part that mm-hmm. doesn't think a woman is capable of being the CEO of the corporation, but the fact that they were demeaned for so many years, he may be able to get her at a better price. Mm-hmm. So it mm-hmm. almost becomes the geopolitics of this, and I think the same thing is happening on the right. You know, the fact that Obama is black, they're going to use it. You know, I think to a certain degree, and that's why you hear Gingrich doing it and you know, putting out these little things, you know, because it's just sort of like, you know, it's existed in the past. We've had the problems in the past. So let's try to stir the pot with that now. And of course, I do think there is legitimate bigotry out there. And mm-hmm. it sounds like from Georgia, you know, especially these birthers who continue to go on with this, that they're true bigots. I mean, that they just don't like people because of the color of their skin. But I think a lot of the other people just want to use that because it's existed before, and maybe they can make an inroad with it and take an advantage because of it. Because we all know that the GOP will use anything and everything that they can to slime you.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Jim, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Jim, what do you think about his comments?
I agree. I mean, you know, it's just so out of this world that at this juncture these people are still getting some press. And like he stated, you know, that there has been some other cases that have been thrown out, and he's right in terms of the lawyers having to pay for bringing frivolous lawsuits. And yet here we sit with this judge who thinks he's going to have the high in power, you know, to keep it going and subpoena the president as though you have authority over the president. That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, and not to mention the resources that they're using and the dollars that they're spending for this, you know, is crazy in itself.
Exactly. It's real crazy. And we know Georgia's education system isn't all that great. You remember teachers were letting the kids cheat and stuff down there on their
right.
tests. So, you know, they need to be spending that, reallocating that money into their education system to make sure their teachers are qualified.
Right. Okay, well, it's time for another break. We got to pay some bills, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about the President's State of the Union speech. We thought it was a real big deal, but for the most part, we're going to talk about some pieces of it that are important to you. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Victor Cook.
Hello, New York. And then to know that Reverend Al Green was here. So in love with you. Those guys didn't think I would do it. I told you I was going to do it. And the Sandman did not come out. Don't worry, Rev. I cannot sing like you, but I didn't. I just wanted to show my appreciation.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and AskGMA can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to open up the phone lines again here shortly. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about the president's epic, if you will, State of the Union speech. It is one of the ones, the best ones I've heard in my lifetime, to tell you the truth. And so, Jim, I want you to weigh in on the press. First of all, what do you think about the First Lady's dress?
I was coughing. I'm sorry. What did you say?
I said, what do you think about the First Lady's dress?
Oh, she was beautiful. I mean, that blue says royalty. And she walked in. She commanded the room, as she always does. And she stood her post. I mean, she was divine. It's amazing that you hear anybody talk about her dress this year because you couldn't say nothing. I mean, she was gorgeous. It was all of that and then some. So I mean she looked the part of a queen in her dress on Tuesday night.
So what part of the State of the Union that resonated most to you?
I think him reminding them that we still have work to do,
But the phrase I think that I liked the most was that America is back. I liked the theme around and for anybody that's telling you that we're not back, they don't know what they're talking about. I really enjoyed that, like,
yeah,
kick it in your face type,
yeah,
scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And he was firm about what he had to say, but he wasn't. I didn't take him to be nasty. I took him as being, you know, I've this is my third one, and these are the things I've said to you guys before. Unfortunately, it's not any new information, but you all are not doing what it is you're supposed to do. So I have to repeat this again because you guys aren't listening. So, yes, I've talked about, you know, our deficit and needing to get things in order, but Congress has left them high and dry on a lot, and they're running out of time. Congress is actually running out of time.
Right,
they're either going to have to do it, or he's going to do everything around them. And I like the fact that that's what he said.
Right. And so what's interesting is that, you know, we always talk about what's happening with the president, but a lot of seats are up, too, as well, coming up this fall. And so when you take the fact that if they don't get anything done, he can really now draw a stark contrast to his policies versus their views or their policies, and the fact that they haven't gotten anything done, and now be able to really position himself to get the right people in those seats that will make the best decision for the American people and not just for an ideology.
Right. Because we know that a Democrat is a Democrat, is not a Democrat.
That's right.
So we got to, and I like what you say in terms of the right people in there, because there are some people that wear the title of Democrat that have no Democratic values. And that was evident during the whole healthcare debate and how they held that up. That was
those blue dogs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those blue dog Democrats who basically are nothing more than Republicans, in my opinion. But it was advantageous to their career to be a Democrat. And so they need to be moved out of the way. You know, Mary Landrieu and the lady down there from Arkansas, they need to be moved out of the way. If they're not going to be on his team and they're not going to have his back, then they need to be gone. Some members of the Congressional Black Caucus need to be gone. Some of them have been there as long as I've been alive.
Yeah. This is true. And we know,
and so
we know that's not that long, though.
Yeah, whatever. I think though that he was firm. He laid it all out. But he wrapped it all up, which is a mark of a good leader. You know, and I would say when I would meet with my staff and they had not done something I needed them to do, you know, I had to go head on and chastise them for not doing what I needed them to do. But by the time they walked out of that meeting, they felt better than they did when they walked in, because I made a point to remind them of the good things, you know, that we have accomplished, but that we have so much left to do. And until we finish it, then we can't sit down. And that's basically what he said. We are a great nation. We have accomplished a lot, but we still have work to do. And I'm trusting that you guys will get it done. Now, if you choose not to, I will work around you. But I really want us to work together. And that's what I felt, you know, coming from him during that time when he was talking.
You know, one of the interesting transformation that I've seen out of the president is that he moved from the center to, I'm not going to say left or right, but he moved more towards his morals, his values, his ethics. And if you notice, the president over the first few years was really trying to say, hey, guys, I really want to work with you all. Hey, guys, I really want to do what's in the best interest of both of us so we can move this country forward. But after continuously getting no, after continuously getting from the Republican Party that all we want to do is make you a one-term president, by continuously getting from them a pushback on every issue, even when they were initially brought up by the Republican Party, he then took a sharp shift towards things that matter most to him. And so for the last several months, if you notice, what we've been hearing from the president, things are true to his core. And he's saying he's not budging. He tried that before, and it didn't work. So he's sticking to his guns on every issue that's important to him. You know, case in point, the pipeline. He was trying to make sure that things were in order. He wanted to make sure that the research was done when it came to the Keystone Pipeline. But they tried to push him on it. He said, no, I'm not doing that anymore because here are my true core values. Here are the things that are most important to me, and I'm going to stick to that gun. And he's now fighting for those issues. So when I watched the State of the Union, I saw him talk about education and about tax cuts for the middle class with conviction. And so those are the things that I really got and really had made me want to get up now and fight side by side with the president. You know, before, I was always supporting him, but kind of in a passive manner. But now because, to me, he's really sticking to his guns. And now it makes me want to get out and do better, work harder to get the word out as much as I can to support the president because he is doing the right thing.
For sure, and I agree with you as it relates to the education and making it affordable and the warning he sent to colleges. You know, you will not continue to raise tuition
on these
students who are doing their best to get to college.
Or you won't get any money.
Or you will not get any money from the federal government if all you're doing is raising tuition. There has to be a better way. You know, and there's a college right now in the state of Ohio who is offering because they had closed down and they're going to reopen where they actually open back up this year. They're offering free tuition for the next group of students that apply and get into that school over the next 3 years because they're trying to build their student body back up again. And it's a small school, but you know, a free education is a free education. And you know, that's roughly $26,000 a year to go to that school. And if you can go there for free, you know, go somewhere for free.
Exactly.
Of course, the president said they're going to get all kind of matching funds from the government for doing such a program like that. So that's something to be applauded at this time.
Yeah, you know, he said, of course, it's not enough for us to increase student aid. We can't just keep subsidizing skyrocketing tuition. We'll run out of money. States also need to do their part by making higher education a higher priority in their budgets. All colleges and universities have to do their part by working to keep costs down. Recently, he spoke with a group of college presidents who've done just that. And he goes on to say that if you can't stop tuition from going up, the funding you get from taxpayers will go down. Again, the president is really sticking to his convictions and the fact that he's really on the part of the American people. So I know when it comes to this November, we really got to be out there and keeping him in office for another 4 years.
Oh, for sure. Because so much is at stake if we don't keep him in office for the next 4 years. There's so much going on. You know, there's so many things that we've come to find to be a privilege. That, you know, so many people, you know, died for. And there's an argument that people didn't die, you know, so that, you know, for me to vote. They died for my right to vote. Well, then you need to take full advantage of that right and go out and do something with it and not just sit down on it. Because, you know, so many people's lives was lost. And if we don't take full advantage of the opportunities that we have now, then we will find ourselves in a time where we won't have access to anything.
That's right.
So the fact that we have access now to education, we need to take advantage of it. We need to be at school. You know, there's parts of the puzzle, and I like the fact that he wants states to, you know, raise that age limit or when kids can drop out.
Yeah, speaking of that, he said that we also know that when students don't walk away from their education, more of them walk the stage to get their diploma. When students are not allowed to drop out, they do better. So tonight, I am proposing that every state, requires that all students stay in school until they graduate or turn 18.
That's right.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. I mean, that says more than we've heard any president ever say about education.
Right.
Because we know no child left behind left too many kids behind, and it did not give us what we needed.
To say the least.
to say the least, because mm-hmm. we look at the foundation of how we were taught, and we look at the foundation of how these children are being taught, and they don't know the basics because they're being taught to a test. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to do a better job of not only of paying our teachers, but we've got to make sure that we're teaching our kids what they need to know to be successful.
Right. That's
you
right.
You know, and recognizing early on, it might not be a full four-year college. It might be a trade school. It might be, you know, a two-year college, to, you know, community college to get you started. And he talks about community colleges so that it's not some sort of stigma, you know, that you didn't go to a big four-year school. Go somewhere and learn a trade or learn how to do something that will allow you to have some sort of success here, you know?
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that he talked about that I want to mention is tax reform. And so, of course, there are both extremes, right? Some people are paying no taxes, and at the other extreme, people are paying less than their fair share. So he's talking about this tax reform should follow what they call the Buffett rule. And if you make more than $1 million a year, you should not pay less than 30% in taxes. And my Republican friend Tom Coburn is right. Washington should stop subsidizing millionaires. In fact, you're earning $1 million a year, you shouldn't get special tax subsidies or deductions. And I bring this up because I've recently come across a couple of people that I know that were paying taxes at a regular rate. But once they started making over $100,000 or so, their taxes went down. And so their comment was, you know, how is it that when I was not making a lot of money, I was paying higher in taxes, and now that I'm making a lot more money than I did in the past, my taxes go down, specifically towards Social Security. So there's a law out there that says if you make over $106,800, of course, you stop paying taxes on that money. And so that's why it's a big brouhaha about the whole Mitt Romney tax structure, right? He only paying a 13.4%, what they call an effective tax rate. That means on the dollars that he's making, when you add all the money that he's paying on taxes, he's paying a lot less than someone making $50,000 or $60,000. And so the question becomes, is it fair? And so the Republicans argue that the liberals are making argument against people making money, or rich people making money. And they're trying to argue that it's class warfare. When in fact, we're saying that if you make $200,000, $300,000, or maybe just $50,000, the tax burden should be the same. Because at the upper end income brackets, of course, the money becomes, you have a lot more disposable income to be able to do that. Meaning, I can go out and I can buy these luxury dogs, I can go out and do this frivolous shopping, I can go out and take these lavish vacations. But when you're on a lower income, you can't do that. But yet the lower income are paying more in taxes, meaning that the government is causing a more of a burden on them as opposed to those people having all of that extra income. And then the second argument about this whole tax structure is the fact that Mitt Romney is making all his money off of other people's money, whereas the people at the lower income are making their money by blood, sweat, and tears. So again, the question becomes, is it fair? You know, we're not saying don't be rich, because I think people aspire to make a lot of money. But yet and still, if you're making all that money, why is it that you're paying less? Not equal. I mean, equal would be fair. Not more. We're not saying for them to pay more. We're saying, mm-hmm. why are they paying less? So what do you think about that law, Jima?
I agree. There has to be some revision. And it's unfortunate because the law didn't just get into effect when President Obama got in office. You know, has been going on for forever. So I don't know why, you know, people are acting like this is just now a problem. No, it's been a problem. And had, you know, President Bush done something about it when he was in office, it might would have offset the cost of the daggum war he took us to. You know, so... Right. But he didn't. You know, he extended these. You know, he increased them, as a matter of fact, now that I think about it. So, you know, and with Mitt Romney, you know, I just don't understand how he can stand before you and say, I know what it feels like to get a pink slip, or to think you're going to get a pink slip,
Well, you ain't really had a job in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Where you have to go to work every day. And I mean, you know, just because it's based on what you say, all his money is off of somebody else's money.
Exactly. Other people's money.
You know, investments and things, which is how he can get around the loophole in the tax system.
Right.
Because of that, because he hasn't, because it's not, quote unquote, earned income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's off of investment, so that gets a way around it, and it needs to be fixed. I mean, there's no way around it. Somebody has to stand and take the charge and say we can't afford to do this no more.
So that's why I'm very excited about this particular election, because there is a stark contrast. For the first time in my life, I see exactly the differences. You know, sometimes when you're watching these candidates, they kind of talk about the lines are blurred. You really can't see who's telling the truth or what law is going to affect you. But in this particular case, when it comes to health care, in this particular case, when it comes to taxes, in this particular case, when it comes to education, in this particular case, when it comes to the government helping out where it's necessary, there's a stark contrast between the Democratic candidate and the Republican candidate. And there, and what's most of all that's important is the fact that when people say, I'm going to, you know, explore looking at another candidate, well, they're saying that they want to choose all of those things against what the president is doing. I mean, there's no other way around that. When they go out and talk about, well, I don't know if I'm going to vote for the president this time. Well, it's very clear to me the differences between the Republican candidate and the president of the United States. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, it's like night and day, literally, with these people. And none of them have, in my opinion, can't really even carry his water because they're so not ready for prime time, as they say. Newt Gingrich with all of his stuff and Mitt Romney with, I mean, they just, I am relishing the day when it's completely done. And we're getting ready to have that first debate between him and whoever it's going to be. I can't wait.
Yeah. Speaking about not waiting, that's something that I want to talk about, and I hope that the listeners out there are paying a close attention to. And that is the Facebook IPO. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about this Facebook IPO, what it means, and their filing, if they decide to file next week. How you can benefit from this. A lot of people that are listening to the show right now may be familiar with Facebook, may have heard it. The numbers now are like 50% of the world is basically on Facebook in some capacity, or at least they know somebody is on Facebook. And so the company is a private company now, and they're in a position to take their company public. What does that mean? When you hear the term IPO, initial public offering, let's talk about that when we return. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, Facebook IPO is the topic of the conversation. And we want to talk a little bit about the Wall Street Journal report and why this is important, so very important. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Facebook Incorporated is inching closer to an IPO, that means an initial public offering, that it hopes will value the company at more than $100 billion, B, billion with a B. Now, according to the people familiar with the matter, the social networking firm is now targeting a time frame of April to June for an initial public offering. The company is exploring raising $10 billion in its IPO, what would be one of the largest offerings ever in a deal that might assign Facebook a $100 billion valuation, a number greater than twice that of such stalwarts as HP, Hewlett-Packard, and 3M Company. So I want to talk about why this is important. Well, typically, if you're, you know, lower income, or typically if you are middle income and you don't have a lot of disposable income, I talked about that earlier. You typically don't get the information, or you don't get involved in the strategies of money making money, basically. And so, and again, I'm not offering you any financial advice, but what I am offering you is the opportunity to go out there and take advantage of the information that's out there available. I always talk about my people perish for the lack of knowledge. Well, here's an opportunity to find out, or to look for, or to investigate what's going on with this Facebook IPO. So typically, when a company goes public, what they're saying is they're going to offer their they're going to offer you share prices for you to buy into the company. And what that typically means is you're going to buy shares of this particular company, and then with the hope that the shares go up. It's an investment. There's an investment in stocks. And so a very tricky, very risky type of investment. But for the truth of the matter is, a company that has been obviously growing over the last few years is at a better risk than companies that have not been growing. And so, again, I encourage you to go out there and take a look at what Facebook is doing and potentially get involved with an investment group, or get involved with a couple of different people that understand what's happening with this particular stock. Because the truth of the matter is, if you get in, get into this stock, you have an opportunity to make quite a substantial amount of money on this particular investment. So why is the question, though, is why is Facebook so popular? What's the big deal? How are they making money? And a lot of people will argue that they're not selling any products, they're not giving you any service, they don't have any kind of goods, right? So if you look at the fact that when you look at a computer, and you talk about the computer companies, well, the computer companies go out there and they have a product that people buy. But when you talk about Facebook being a company, there is nothing that you put your hands on. There's nothing tangible that you can be associated with. Well, the truth of the matter is, when you look at Facebook as a marketing vehicle, the information that people volunteer is valuable to companies that are selling products. So let me give you a case in point. So historically, when you talk about advertising, are you talking about marketing? You're looking at something like TV, radio, newspaper, magazines. And so people understand that, right? When you look at the Super Bowl ads, they're going to spend millions of dollars on Super Bowl ads because they want to reach the people. Well, the challenge with a Super Bowl ad, or the challenge with those type of marketing or advertising vehicles, you really never know who you're targeting. For example, when I go to the Super Bowl party in next weekend, and when I look at, or a couple of weekends from now, whenever the Super Bowl is, when I sit down with the people in that room, you don't really know who's in that room with me. You know you are marketing to that household. You know what zip code they live in. You could potentially know the valuation of that neighborhood, but you don't really know the specifics of who lives in that house. because people can travel. You may have friends over. They may have kids. They may not have children. They may be all male. It may be a fraternity meeting in their house. It may be all women. It may be a sorority meeting in the house. Or it just may be an elderly group. You really don't know. But when you're talking about targeting specific people, Facebook, you do know. Because people willfully put their age, the things that they like, the things that they don't like, the articles that they read the most. And you can mine all this data. You can take all that information and now knows precisely who you want to target to. So if I go around and I say I want to target young college women and men from the age of 17 to 25, and I want to know if they're interested in politics or they're interested in sports, I can now begin to target that specific group. So the likelihood that I sell my product, whether if it's something dealing in sports or entertainment or politics, the likelihood that I'm going to have a buyer is going to be more likely than not, because I know I'm targeting my audience toward a specific demographics. If you take that same case and you're going to market this product in sports, entertainment, or politics, as I did in the old school type of mentality, through mass media, through market magazines, through mass media when it comes to newspaper, or through mass media when it comes to television, you really don't know, you don't get those specifics. So Facebook has now put together this model that they can tell you the demographics down to almost the person of an individual household. Again, when it comes to research, when it comes to marketing, when it comes to all those things that companies require to use to sell you a product or good, Facebook has it. And this is the reason why it is so important to be in the conversation, or to be able to understand what's happening with Facebook and everything they're doing with this IPO. Now, of course, the reason why I am so involved in this is because of our company, TaylorMade. You hear the commercials that we talk about. You hear the thing that we talk about, social media marketing, because this is the way from this point forward that people will be getting involved, where people will be doing business. Now, a long time ago, of course, there was word of mouth, right? You know, I tell you, I went down to this chicken joint. And it was great. You know, it was hot. It was fresh. Or the fish they had, or whatever the situation is, I would call somebody and I would tell them. But now you do that same thing on Facebook. You do that same thing on Twitter. And if you're a professional, you do it on LinkedIn. And so that's why social media is really now taking hold, because they know companies are now more engaged, more involved, because they can get this information. So that's why the Facebook IPO is very, very important. So I would encourage you to get out there, to get involved, to understand what's happening with this Facebook IPO, because it's important. And not to mention the part about making money. Now, of course, I mentioned early on about how important it was to be knowledgeable about these things. But the fact of the matter is, you can really make a lot of money doing this. Now, here's the caveat. When the IPO comes out, of course, you have to have a certain things in place. You need to have a brokerage account. There are several out there. I'm not endorsing any of them, but I encourage you to go out there and find out, who a broker's out there and what brokerage account that you can get involved in, because you have enough time between now and the IPO coming out. The second thing you need to know is about the IPO is the fact that once you get a brokerage account with a company, a Merrill Lynch used to be one. They're not as popular as they was back in the day. And you may hear E-Trade, you may hear names like that thrown across the network all the time with the little baby and everything. But for the most part, those are people that you can get a brokerage account from. Now, once you get the brokerage account, you pay for the price of trading. And what that means, if Facebook says I'm going to sell a share of my stock for $100, right? So you have to have the $100 to buy the share of stock. And then you also have to pay for the transaction. So if the transaction costs you $9 or $12 or anything like that, then you would pay $100 for the share and $9 to $12 for the transaction. So now you own a share of the Facebook IPO. You own a share of Facebook. And then the stock market comes out and they talk about, yeah, the stock price is going up and going down. And there is risk of the stock price going down, which means that if you have $100 and you invested $100, if the stock price is now $97, you've lost $3 plus the amount of money you made for the trade, of course. But lo and behold, if the stock price goes up, now the $100 that you invested now becomes $100 plus whatever the cost of the increase in the share. So over time, if you look at Google, for example, when they came out, when the IPO hit, there was like around $100 or so, and now it's up to like $400 or $500. So now you've made four times the amount of money that you put into the stock. So that's why it's important for you to get the information about it, and then look at opportunities to pool your resources with other people. Now, of course, I'm not somebody that has $1 million or a couple of $100,000 at my disposal at any given time, but I would like to take the opportunity to purchase some stock of this magnitude, because in our lifetime, it's very seldom that you get these opportunities. And then, of course, there are other companies out there that also when I bought some shares of Ford, of course, I bought them at $1 or so, and they went all the way up to $17. So I made 17 times the amount of my initial investment. So there are other cases when you can make an investment and you can lose that same amount of money. But for the most part, the significance of Facebook is because so many people are already involved and engaged in the product. It would be different if it was something that you didn't use. It would be different if it was something that you were not familiar with or didn't participate in making successful. That's why products like Procter & Gamble do so well, because everybody used toilet paper and dishwashing liquid, right? That's why oil and gas can always be at a rate, at a price that's really that on the margin all the time, because people have to use these products. So again, there's an opportunity early on to be involved in something that most people are using, to be a part of something that you know that works, to be a part of something, to own something that you use in most cases every day, and to be able to make some money off of it. So, of course, full disclosure, I don't have anything to do Facebook. I do use it. I don't own any part of the company, anything like that. But I plan to get more information about the IPO, to be a well-formed investor, and look at how many people, who I can get involved with to participate in this process. You know, there was a couple of different times that we've had opportunities like this. One is when Microsoft was out. When they first came into the industry and they had their IPO, of course, they made billions of dollars. What, Bill Gates jumped to the highest, one of the highest, the richest person in the world. Then you had, of course, Oracle Software did the same thing. And now, and most recently, Google. Now you have Facebook. Now is an opportunity to be a part of the system that's getting paid so much. When you see Zuckerberg and all these people talking about how much money they're making, they're making money off our backs. The reason why these people are so rich, because we use their products and services, but we're not a part of the money making or the part of the growth and success of these companies, because we're looking at it from a consumer perspective and not from a point of view where you're talking about investing and having a strategy or a portfolio that would be something that can significantly change your life. Now, granted, I do believe that the stock price will be probably over $100, which means for every share that you purchase is going to be $100, which means that if you don't have the disposable income that I talked about earlier that people that of significant means have, then it's a good time to start planning for it. It's a good time to start researching all the things that perhaps could be a part of this system. It's a good time to find out what a brokerage account is. It's a good time to find out about stocks and bonds and mutual funds and things of that nature, because the economy is about to bounce back. You know, over the last 5 or so years, people 401ks, which is an investment account, has taken a tremendous hit. They've pretty much devalued probably about 50%. People lost a lot of money over the last year by people speculating and getting involved and doing these crazy tactics, right? So now, which means that we are pretty much level set back to zero. President Obama has, of course, enacted a lot of legislation to kind of filter some of the nonsense, to kind of watch the people so they won't take advantage of the consumers like they did in the past. But of course, there's always going to be situations where people are going to try to take advantage of you. But I can tell you this. The president is doing everything in his power to make sure things are going to be better this time around. So I would encourage you to go out there and find out about it, to look up what's happening with the Facebook IPO. I think he's going to be doing it. Marcus is going to be doing an interview today, this evening. Listen to him. Find out what he's doing. Find out what the IPO is about. You know, read the little blurbs of the Wall Street Journal. Ask questions. Because when the IPO drops, and if it comes out in late spring, early summer, then by the time the election comes around, when you see the stock price at $200, $300, $400, you're going to be saying, man, I wish I would have got on board then. I encourage you to go out there and take a look at the IPO. Well, that's our show for today. Of course, I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. It was a great show, and thank to all our callers. And I really appreciate the callers calling in because, of course, it provides a good dialogue for us to talk about all of the different things that are going on in our society today. And, of course, I'd like to thank my co-host, Jima. She always does a wonderful job out there. All right, so don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Pretty wagon, pretty.